Omaha Desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's time zones. Oh, so many of them. Every single one of them covered like a blanket by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. Great to be here, escorting you through the weekend. Safely through the weekend, I hope. Speaking of safely or not so safe, Discovery Channel running Super Volcano. And I was watching that right up until airtime, but I've got the DVR running on it, so I will capture the entire thing and see it all. But basically, a pretty scary flick, to be sure. It's about Yellowstone, the caldera going pa-koom. And the entire area, including mine down here, I think. Now, I didn't get that far in the show, but I imagine we're toast, too, here in the high desert. Speaking of big events, an incredible late snowstorm in Colorado. A very good friend of mine, Tim, is a truck driver, and they've got all the roads closed. He was in the New Mexico area near Colorado, near the Colorado border, and those roads are closed, so he's in a motel for the night. 18-wheeler getting snow piled on top of it outside going nowhere, and that's where a lot of people are stuck and going nowhere on those highways. So if you're out there in one of them, stay warm and stay put. You probably have no choice. Turning to what world news there is, the lead story, Cardinals prepare to plan conclave. Here it comes. Catholics' thoughts turn to who might replace their beloved Pope as the Cardinals silenced by an unprecedented pledge not to reveal their thinking, prepared to meet again Monday to plan next week's conclave to select a new leader. One of the Cardinals, who celebrated masses around Rome on Sunday, gently requested of the faithful, all of you out there, to please stop speculating on possible successors to Pope Paul, John Paul II. So, in other words, stop the rumors. They'll figure it out. But what a process. Thousands of Israeli police mobilized at Jerusalem's most sensitive holy site Sunday, but confronted only a handful of Jewish extremists intent on scuttling a Gaza pullout by trying to tie up security forces. In Gaza, militants fired dozens of mortar shells after Israeli forces killed three teenagers. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, speaking on a plane taking him to Monday's meeting with President Bush, said the mortar fire is, quote, a flagrant violation of the understandings, end quote, reached at the February truce summit with Palestinian leader Abbas. Private GOP tensions over Tom DeLay's ethics controversy have spilled into the public today as a Senate leader called on DeLay to explain his actions when a House Republican demanded the majority leader's resignation. Representative Chris Shays, Republican from Connecticut, told the Associated Press in an interview calling for DeLay to step down as a majority leader. So I guess it's getting very serious. Hundreds of travelers, as I mentioned, stranded at the Denver airport and along highway Sundays as a blizzard blew across eastern Colorado with wet, heavy snow. The temperature right now in Denver, probably about 28 degrees or so, and that makes for the very wet kind of heavy snow that they're getting. Tiger Woods, he's back, folks. He's the Masters champion yet again, turning back a surprising challenge Sunday with a shot of sheer magic and a birdie putt to win a playoff that he never expected. So congratulations, Tiger. Women, look at this. Women at the National Institutes of Health faced sexual intimidation and repeated disregard of their concerns for the welfare of patients in AIDS experiments, according to testimony by two senior female officers and documents gathered by other investigators, one longtime medical officer at the government's premier medical research agency alleges that the harassment and disregard for federal safety regulations are so widespread that employees are now afraid to hold up experiments even if they see if they see a safety problem. In a moment, I've got some news, well, that's very worrisome. You might or might not have heard about it. If not, you will in a moment. Scary stuff. You might not have heard about this on the regular evening news. I'm really not sure, but this really, really, really bears your careful watching, all of ours. Headline is Panic in Angola as Killer Virus Spreads. The killer virus is Marburg. Most of you have heard, I think, of Ebola. Marburg is a close and extremely deadly relative of Ebola. Well, just listen to the stories. Panic spread through Angola's capital yesterday after the worst recorded outbreak of the deadly Marburg virus, an Ebola-like condition that kills with massive internal bleeding, claimed its 150th life. Many in Luanda, a city of 3.8 million, withdrew their children from schools, shops, ran low on supplies of bleach, which millions wanted to disinfect the water supply. State radio broadcast an emergency message every single 10 minutes saying, alert, Marburg, don't touch any corpse. Inform the health authorities about any suspicious illness or death due to bleeding. Angola's health ministry said that 163 cases of Marburg have been recorded thus far. All are believed to have originated in the province of Uige, I guess it is, U-I-G-E, about 180 miles northeast of Luanda on the border with the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Four people have died in the capital, all of them thought to have traveled from that city. An Italian doctor working in a hospital there is among the dead. At least three-quarters of the victims are children under the age of 15. We've now started to deploy teams in the problem areas, said the World Health Organization. We can get a real sense of the depth and width of the problem. It's important to realize that Marburg is very new for us. It is serious since we don't know much about it. And then I picked up on a commentary published in something called, or on a website called Combionetics.com, and this is very worrisome. Marburg airborne transmission in Angola. Listen carefully, and I can't, of course, guarantee it's not one of the major news services, so I'm just going to read it to you. Be your own judge. It says, medical workers warn visitors not to shake hands with anyone and not to stand directly in front of residents when talking to them for fear that a cough could release an infectious spray of spittle. Silo Margarita is one of the few nurses still working at the 500-bed regional hospital here, a sprawling collection of well-kept one-story concrete buildings that appeared almost deserted on Saturday afternoon. Wearing a surgical mask and plastic wrapped on her boots, she continued to care for 12 patients, despite the fact, she said, that as many as 15 of the hospital's nurses and two doctors have died from Marburg. The two nurses died only last Thursday, she said. The deteriorating situation there is raising the obvious question, is Marburg transmitting through the air in Angola? Although there have always been warnings about transmission via contact with bodily fluids and concern about coughing, raising questions about the ease of airborne transmission, initially most of the Marburg cases were children under the age of one, suggesting transmission via contaminated needles during childhood vaccinations. However, about a month ago, the first healthcare worker died, and as noted above, the number is now 17. Though protective gear was in short supply initially, the deaths of healthcare workers are still being recorded. The total number of Marburg cases alive is relatively small. When the WHO first announced the sequence results on March 23rd, they sequenced the virus, there were only seven Marburg patients alive. Get this. 95 patients out of 102 so far have died. The number diagnosed has risen to 213. The number still alive has grown to 30. The increase in patients alive simply reflects the fact that newly diagnosed patients are being tallied quicker than older existing cases are dying. As noted above, there are only 12 patients in the main hospital at the epicenter of the outbreak. The ability of such a small number of patients to infect so many healthcare workers, especially, one might add, after infection control efforts have been increased, does raise the possibility that airborne transmission is fairly efficient. The current outbreak in Angola has a case fatality rate at or near 100% higher than any other prior outbreak of Marburg or Ebola. It has now begun transmitting in Luanda and will easily eclipse the old record of 280 dead set for Ebola, you'll recall, in 1967. So this is really one of those things that the world has got to keep its eye centered directly on. Should there actually prove to be airborne Marburg with up near, what, a 100% fatality rate, actually, looks like, that could go whizzing around the world very quickly indeed. And I'm sure, and I would hope they would be taking appropriate steps to isolate it. And the mind, mine anyway, always wanders back to some motion pictures, you'll recall, that were made about outbreaks in the U.S. and the cleansing of the area that ultimately was ordered by the political. You know, I think I can see that such a horrible decision could be made. I mean, there could be a medical absolute necessity to simply sterilize the area where such an outbreak occurred if it began to be airborne. I mean, that's literally all you could do and probably the only way that it could be stopped. So, you know, we've got to keep our eye on this kind of thing. The following, I think you will find very, very educational. This comes from a listener of mine down in Australia, a police officer, in fact, Ed Chanel. I'll give his name, a police officer in Australia. Hi, Art. Thought perhaps you all would like to see the real figures from down under. It has now been 12 months since the gun owners in Australia were forced under a new law to surrender. Now, it turned out to be a total of 640,381 personal firearms to be destroyed by our own government, a program costing Australian taxpayers, he adds, $500 million. And the results from taking all of these guns are now in. You ready? Of course, as you know, crime would be down now substantially. They've taken away the guns from people, more than well over 500,000 of them, and destroyed them. So let's see what's going on in Australia now. It's been a year. Australia-wide, homicides, whoops, are up 3.2%. Australia-wide, assaults are up 8.6%. Australia-wide, armed robberies, oh my God, they're up 44%. Now, you would think with all the guns gone, they'd be down, but they're up 44%. In fact, in the state of Victoria alone, homicides with firearms are now up 300%. Oh, my gosh. Then it says, note, while the law-abiding citizens turned them in, the criminals did not, and the criminals still have their guns. While figures show over the previous 25 years, there was a steady decrease in armed robbery with firearms, this has changed drastically upward in the past 12 months since criminals are now guaranteed their prey is unarmed. There also has been a dramatic increase in break-ins and assaults of the elderly. Australian politicians are just at a loss to explain how public safety seems to have decreased after such a monumental effort and expense was expended in successfully ridding Australian society of guns. I doubt you're going to see this on the American Evening News or hear your governor or members of the state assembly disseminating this information. But the Australian experience would seem to prove it. Guns in the hands of honest citizens save lives and property, and yes, gun control laws affect only the law-abiding citizens. Take note, Americans, before it's too late. And I think that's a very well-advised a little missive from Australia. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. A year ago, they expended all of this money. They collected zillions of guns from law-abiding citizens in Australia, and what is their payment? Much more crime. Much less safe. Now, I live out in an area here, you know, kind of in the sticks. And here, you're allowed, if you're clean and they do an FBI check, to carry a gun. And I must tell you, it makes for a very much more polite society, and I think a safer society. It's just common sense. Think about it. If you were a burglar, or worse, and you were approaching a residence, wouldn't you have much more reason to pause if you were, for example, approaching a residence here near where I live, where virtually everybody has a gun? You're damn right you would be. Or perhaps here where I live, where one might, general expectation might be 10 or 15 or even 20 minutes before the police could arrive. Should something happen, about the only thing the police are going to be able to do, if it, you know, with somebody with bad intent, is they'll be able to draw a chalk line around your body. And that's where you were, right there in that chalk line. But if you have a gun to defend yourself, well, once again, from the mind of the person preparing to do the dastardly deed, they've got to imagine you might have a gun. But if you're in Australia, and you're a criminal, and you're confident that all of those nasty deterrent things have been collected, and the worst you're going to face is somebody with a frying pan in their hand, well, I guess the numbers don't lie, do they? So before we approve any measure to collect up all the guns at some great taxpayer expense and have them melted down, perhaps we should all reflect on what happened in Australia. What do you think? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Well, you would have been, sorry. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi there, how are you?
I'm quite well, thank you.
Great. Just wanted to ask about Ed Dames last night, if we could.
What would you ask about him?
Well, he mentioned that some of the little elements that he saw in the future could be changed. He spoke of changing small
smaller things. Maybe something, for example, at a personal level for you. I mean, if you saw you were going to get hit by a truck, you just wouldn't go there. You wouldn't get hit. Something else would happen. The larger things out of control, he said.
Okay. Now, as far as the collective goes, you know, like moving faith can move mountains, don't you think we could sort of delay or maybe alter some of the big stuff as well? What do you think?
Well, it's I don't rule it out. As you know, I experimented with and believe very strongly in this mass consciousness business. But I also temper that, as I think you know, with caution. Because, you know, the old expression of not fooling around with Mother Nature, it's probably good advice. I mean, you know, if you're doing something on that scale, then if you did have an unintended consequence, oh my God, it would be massively severe over a very wide area.
And sir, I'd like to ask you, I'm from a military family, I'd like to ask you about Semper Fi. If you're swearing an oath to the Constitution or just to the President's administration, how does that work for you guys?
What do you mean, you guys?
Well, the military, Marines, you can, you know.
Semper Fi is, of course, a Marine expression, as you.
Yeah, but it's regarding the oath or something along the, in
I'm not clear on what you're asking.
Well, you know, you got to sign away your constitutional rights to fight to protect the Constitution, and then everybody's letting the Constitution be eroded anyway. It's an odd dichotomy.
Well, that's a very broad political comment.
It's a dichotomy.
I mean, yeah, it is. Of course, the Constitution is being eroded. You know, in the broader sense, as we fight terrorism, the natural outcome of terrorism is going to be an erosion of personal rights. To fight it, We've got to search where we did not previously search to fight it. We've got to be able to come up with all kinds of new technology, face recognition programs, that sort of thing. There's got to be tighter controls at the border. And those things that you consider to be your right of privacy are certainly becoming eroded as we fight terrorism. Just no question about it. But I don't see any contradiction with regard to somebody taking an oath to, you know, join one of the U.S. armed services and protect the Constitution. Not maybe in the very broadest sense. But in the meantime, believe me, a soldier still follows orders. When you're in the military, that's what you do. You follow orders and you let policy be decided in Washington. That's just how it works. Good morning.
Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Those are the numbers. They're a little different over the weekend, so you might make note of them. We'll be in open lines for the next half hour. Top of the hour, though, comes actually the world's biggest expert, the world's foremost expert on the whole phenomena of near-death experiences, the Honorable Dr. Raymond Moody. I think it sort of threw that in. Very, very great guy, Dr. Moody, and he essentially began all of this in the modern era. He's quite a guy, and if you've been curious about near-death, he's the man. Coming up in less than half an hour. And so into open lines again. At the top of the hour comes Dr. Raymond Moody. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi. You're on the air.
Oh, how you doing, Art?
I'm okay, sir.
You want to air? I died once.
You
a
died?
A long time ago.
You died once a long time ago.
Yeah, back in 82. I was in a bad car wreck. I got busted up real bad and wound up spending about 6 weeks in a coma, and my body healed, and coming out of the coma, I went into shock, and everything shut down.
Yeah, 6 weeks in a coma, shock, everything shuts down. I assume your heart quit beating, that sort of thing.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any recollection? How much do you remember of that time?
Actually, I'm not sure if it was a dream or a memory or what happened, but if it was, it was not too bad. Because I didn't ever see him working on me or anything like you hear most of the other people did.
Yes.
I kind of woke up like in a park, and it was a park I grew up in. The only thing was is everybody that was there was somebody who had died before me.
Well, that's a pretty big hint.
And, the weird part was the first person who met me was my grandfather. And when I saw him, he looked like he did the last time I saw him. But as time went by, everybody changed, and we all just kind of became the same. Like, we were all, you know, about the same age, and everything was just really good. I mean, it's one of them things that I just felt a lot of love there.
In other words, when you first got there, for example, you met your grandfather who had passed, and he looked at first as you remembered him, but then changed until eventually everybody still recognizable was about the same age.
Yeah, you know who everybody was. You just everybody was the same, though.
That's pretty interesting. All right, thank you very, very much. I was speaking with a friend of mine on ham radio, Ben. He's a doctor. He's a physician, now retired. I think mostly retired. I think he still does some. I don't know what he does. I think surgery. Anyway. He knew that Dr. Moody was coming on tonight, and he said it is very interesting. You know, we encounter things like that. He told me he's encountered people who have had these NDEs like the man we just talked to, and he's not so sure about it. He said, you know, there are explanations that could end up making everybody telling, you know, everybody's telling the truth. In other words, there are physical explanations that doctors give for what might be causing this, but then again, there's what the people who have gone through it say. And Ben said, well, my friend the doctor, you know, there could be explanations that would make both parties happy, the doctor and the people who have gone through these experiences. Anyway, that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
I'm on?
Yes.
Hello, this is Andrew. I was just commenting about the guns.
Oh, the guns.
Yes. I think it's very foolish of them to take them away from the public. What if you're in an area like, I live in Memphis, and Memphis is an extremely crime-involved city for one of its size. And everywhere you look, there's crime and everything. So what happens if, say, you're in your house by yourself and somebody kicks in the door? And if you don't have a gun, what are you going to do?
Well, right. In other words, don't take guns away from the people that... look, the statistics show it again and again and again and again that the crimes are not committed ever by people who have, for example, carry permits. These are people that have been checked out by the local police and the FBI and the authorities. And they're given permits to carry weapons. These people are not committing crimes. The ones that are doing it are the criminals. And they have the guns. And they're not going to turn them in. So, this is like gun 101. I guess mine is the mentality of most Americans. We believe very strongly, and I think this evidence from Australia, you know, how many times can you underscore something? This one just nails it right to the wall. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Blair in Sedona, Arizona.
Hello.
Would you remind folks of your 2001 interview with Pam Reynolds about her experience when she was completely brain dead?
Remarkable stuff. Yes, I've had actually, sir, the one that hit me between the eyes was Sarah. Sarah is one I will never... ever forget. I don't know what hit me so hard about Sarah, and I don't know whether you ever heard that one.
I heard that one, too.
Yeah, that was the best, I thought.
Yeah.
Pam Reynolds, very good. Sarah, right through the roof.
And so it goes to the point I wanted to make about electronic voice phenomena and what Ed Dames talked about as residual energy being a prime motivator.
Right.
Well, how about this spiritualism that the author of Sherlock Holmes, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, followed in the 19th century, whereby the spiritualists don't worship spirits, but they seek to contact those who cross the border dividing, you know, the material world from the spiritual, and that they say that God is real, but defined in different ways depending upon the individual's level of spiritual development. In other words, the phrase, the God of your understanding, is often used to talk about divinity. So doesn't that sort of bring to mind that maybe not all trance channelers are fraudulent and you just have to sort of judge by their fruits you shall know them?
I certainly agree with that. They're not all fraudulent, though I think there are a lot of frauds out there. I've always been highly suspicious of channeling just because it... I don't know. It's just so easy. I mean, anybody with a little bit of drama could do it. Shift their voice. Begin to become somebody else from long ago with the story of the old and the way it was when you were stabbed. Stabbed through the heart by a sword. Right? So, you know, you can do that. I think anybody almost could do it, some more convincingly than others. However, I think there are real channelers, real psychics, separating the wheat from the chaff, not so easy. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello. Turn your radio off, please. That's number one.
It's off.
Now you may speak.
All right. I was wondering if I'd ever heard of the Prometheus and Bob tapes.
Well, first of all, this is art.
Oh, art.
No, explain what you're talking about.
Oh, Prometheus and Bob tapes are 900,000-year-old tapes made by an alien trying to educate a caveman.
No, I wasn't around for that.
They were cartoons.
Oh.
It's something you might enjoy. It has a very Darwinian overture to it.
All right. Well, you know my email, artbell@aol.com or artbell@mindspring.com. Be sure and send them right along. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, how you doing, Art?
I'm doing okay, sir.
I think what people mostly forget about the Second Amendment is it was stated to help us, you know, just in case the government got out of control as our way of fighting back.
That's one of the reasons, yes, uh-huh. Right, it makes everybody a little uneasy, as they should be, and that means not just criminals, but our government, too. That's what the Second Amendment is all about. It should make those who wish to do evil uncomfortable, because most well-intentioned good citizens are armed, something anybody of evil intent would have to keep in mind before committing it. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, Art, I got an analogy for your buddy who is a medicinal surgeon guy that uses the ham radio. The brain is simply a computer, and it transceives and receives much like a ham radio with video.
Well, nobody's proven that yet.
Well, it takes some DMT.
Take some DMT.
That's all I got to say, man. Well, you guys have a good night.
All right, see you later. Yeah, take some DMT. Well, that doesn't mean you're receiving anything. Well, that means, in a way you are. You're receiving the results of all those neurons firing in directions that they're not sure of. You're getting those, so you're certainly receiving that. Now, whether the brain actually, I can hear my wife laughing in the other room, whether the brain actually receives and transmits anything, we have not detected it electromagnetically yet. That doesn't mean it is not so. It doesn't mean that some sort of communication doesn't occur on, what's the right word for it? There's a nanotechnological answer for this, but at the quantum level, that's what I meant to say. It may well be there's something occurring at the quantum level, but that's way ahead of us, and with what electromagnetic spectrum we have checked, we haven't found any transmission or anything aimed at the brain. Doesn't mean it's not there. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Hey, Art, this is Lynn from Dallas.
Yes.
About the guns, you know, if they try to take our guns away, I've never committed, I'm not a criminal, you know,
mm-hmm.
I've always had a gun.
Mm-hmm.
If they order us to give our guns up, that's going to make me a criminal because I'm not going to do it.
Right. Well, you and many others, sir, that's right. I know. And I don't think the American government is dumb enough to try to tell Americans to give up their guns. You might be able to get away with that in Australia. You might be able to get away with that in other more socialist countries, but not here, not Americans, no way. Now, I know that it's occurred in certain specific areas, New York City, for example, the San Francisco Bay Area, California in general, some certain areas, but other than that, I think that any order for Americans to give up their guns would be met with walls of lead. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hello. Art?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I'm Courtney in Mitchell, South Dakota, listening on 1490 KORN.
Happy to have you. What's up?
Yeah, I guess I'm just kind of weighing on the gun debate. And
I don't even see why it was a debate. What debate?
Well, I guess it's more of a comment about. Sorry about the word debate. I'm a little nervous.
No, I'm being a little facetious. To me, there is no debate. There's just you don't give up your guns, and when you do, you could imagine what would happen, and what did happen in Australia. What I just read you.
And I'm agreeing. I'm an NRA member myself, but I was just going to extrapolate just a little bit and wonder about. You say you live in a fairly remote area.
That's right.
Now, don't you think that would really make the politicians mad, seeing people in remote areas, just because they are isolated and not in a more observable community as a city, where people in cities...
No, I'm not following you. Make them angry. Why?
Well, the people in cities are easier controllable, more easily controlled.
Oh, I suppose. You know, all of this would be true only if they had designs on us, which I don't really believe they do. But we've got to keep our eyes on them.
And it's just the fact that they keep the media really portrays people in remote areas as backwards type of people.
Well, the hell does the media know?
Well, obviously,
You know what? I've got a couple things to say about that. For example, the kind of thing you just said is an attitude that comes from people, you know, in the Northeast Corridor, for example, in New York City, in those kinds of areas. They may look down on the rural people as being somewhat less. But here in the rural area, sir, we're bigger than that. We tolerate people from New York. We tolerate people even from Brooklyn and find that they're good souls. And they need not have such feelings.
I
guess living in the city under all that pressure does that to them.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just happy to be from the Midwest, and just like to thank you for your show and doing a great service, Art.
Have a great night, sir, and thank you very much. There is a kind of an attitude that prevails in the Northeast Corridor about people in the rest of the country, and that's all right. We're bigger than they are. We need not retaliate with our own thoughts vocalized. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Morning.
I think the concealed weapon carry laws in each various state should be integrated into a more uniform concealed carry permit.
They're working on it.
I sure hope they'd work on it soon, because if you go to New Jersey or New York, you sure can get in trouble if you're from Alabama or Georgia.
Yes, I know. I know. They're working on it. Now, how many states might participate in that, and whether it would still apply to cities where you've got, you know, like New York City, for example, I don't know. But, you know, I think generally there's going to be reciprocity among most of the states.
Here in Georgia, I believe we have reciprocity in about 7 states surrounding us.
That's excellent.
But I had a dinner with a politician here about 3 years ago, and he said they'll never outlaw guns. They'll just outlaw the bullets.
Yeah, I've heard that. And I don't know if I buy that either. Plenty of ammunition available. I don't think any of that's going to happen in our lifetimes. Now, that's not to say that in another 100, 200 years, they'll be outlawing phasers or something. What do I know? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Art, it's Barry from Pennsylvania.
Yes, Barry.
I want to talk about the high price of gasoline.
Good. Somebody better.
It's out of control. Yeah. I have a delivery business, and it's costing me at least another $200 a week to run my business.
See, that's what we need to be afraid of. People like you, sir, just in business out all across America, another $200 onto the tab every week for you. And if that has not yet squeezed you out of business, just wait till it goes up another buck or buck and a half. I mean, at some point, there's a breaking point for you.
See, now, my neighbor, he's an over-the-road trucker. He's independent. I'm asking him, how are you able to do this?
Yeah.
He's telling me that his broker is kicking him back money because they're charging the customer more. He told me his fuel bill last week out of his pocket. Now, mind you, he drives an 18-wheeler.
Right.
It was $200. He said he got over $900 back from the broker because they're subsidizing the fuel.
Well,
over-the-road truckers are making it. That's the only...
Yeah.
I'm here on the East Coast. I'm seeing $230, $240 a gallon for diesel.
Oh, yeah. Look, eventually, it's coming out of the consumer's pocket. The price of everything is going to go up. This whole fuel thing could drive us right into an inflationary period that could knock us for a loop. I mean, I did a whole show on this.
I listened.
And I'm right.
What's your opinion? Do you feel that we are running out of gas, out of the fuel, or do you think this is just big business trying to squeeze us?
I think, sir, that the long emergency, that was the title of the article that I read, and by the way, I've scheduled the author of that Rolling Stone article on the show. So I thought you might be interested in that. Those of you who thought that that was an inspired article, the man who wrote it in person is even more inspiring, very vocal. It's called The Long Emergency. And in answer to your question, caller, no, I don't think we're running out of oil. I think that we're at the top of the bell curve, which means we have already extracted the first half of the known reserves in the world. We've already taken them out of the ground. The second half is going to be much harder, much more expensive to extract. So we're not out of oil, but the price of oil is going to spiral to a point that it could do irreparable damage to our economy. That was kind of the point made in that article, and I was so impressed with that article that not only did I read the bulk of it to you here on the air, but I also invited the author, who wrote for Rolling Stone magazine, onto the program. That'll be here coming up in the next couple of weeks or so. Coming up next is Dr. Raymond Moody. I've known Raymond for many, many years. Probably the top of his field. His field is near-death experience. It's a wild one. It'll be a wild show. Coming up next.